Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in South Central Iowa and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA and KRLS. Now with today's In-Depth, here's Dr. Bob Leonard.
What does the Office of the State Veterinarian do? Let's go in depth with Dr. Jeff Kaizand, Iowa State Veterinarian. Jeff, what does the Office of the State Veterinarian do?
So the Animal Industry Bureau within the Iowa Department of Agriculture does many different things. We license animal facilities, commercial breeders, kennels, pound shelters. We also license livestock dealers in Iowa. We license auction markets. Our district veterinarians work with vet clinics in Iowa to make sure they're updated on regulations, inform them of anything that's going on with animal health. One of the big functions we've been doing lately is foreign animal disease preparedness. We've been doing a lot of work with preparing for African swine fever and then just in general any foreign animal disease such as foot and mouth or classical swine fever. We learned quite a bit from 2015 when we had avian influenza in Iowa and what we need to do to be prepared for future disease outbreaks.
Wow, your staff must be huge. That's a lot of work.
Sure. Well, actually, our staff is not very large. We have 8 livestock inspectors that work in the field, and their job is to license, I mentioned, with animal welfare, commercial dog breeders, kennels. One of their jobs is to inspect those facilities. They also do the inspections on auction markets, livestock dealers. Another thing they do that I didn't mention is we regulate the Iowa horse and dog breeding program in Iowa. So they go out and inspect greyhounds and horses and verify that they're born and raised in Iowa to meet certain requirements for Iowa. So they do, and dead animal complaints to several other things. So they do quite a bit. We have 5 district veterinarian positions in Iowa. Currently we have 2 open positions. We're just about to fill one of them, and we hope to fill the 5th one in several months. And then we have 2 compliance investigators. So we actually have a very small staff for the amount of work we do in Iowa.
Well, I understand the training that the veterinarians get, but what about the other people? It still sounds like extensive training is needed for them.
Sure. A lot of it's on-the-job training, but usually we try and put people into those positions with a diverse background from agriculture to even small animals, and then make sure that we have continual training within the department to make sure that as things change, either regulations or the industry changes, that they stay up to date on those things.
And how does that happen? How do you stay up to date?
Sure, just working with industry, whichever industry it is in Iowa, and understand what's going on. And as we go through sometimes even disease investigations and find out how things are either moving or how things work and adapt to those types of situations.
Well, I'm hearing a lot about, swine fever in China, and we're worried about it getting here. How could that happen?
Sure, there's several different possible ways it could happen. One of the big concerns right now is with feed ingredients. There's been some work done by some researchers in the U.S. that have shown that there are ways that viruses can survive from China to the United States and feed ingredients for a certain amount of time, actually for quite a few days. Even some of the viruses have been shown for 60 to 70 days in certain environmental conditions, temperature and moisture. And we import some feed ingredients from China, some of the amino acids or some of the larger feed ingredients that we bring in. There's also some organic soybean meal that comes over. So that's one possibility. African swine fever survives for a long period of time in meat. It's been actually even shown 140 days in salt-cured ham. So if there's meat that comes from a country that has African swine fever and that meat's infected, that's always a possibility. But it has to get into pigs in the United States. So that's why we continually encourage or strongly encourage producers to have a good biosecurity plan on their farm and make sure, whether it's feed ingredients or workers that bring food onto the farms, that they're aware of all the potential ways that ASF could get here and to build in safeguards on their own farms of preventing that.
More in depth after this.
I continued my conversation with Dr. Jeff Kaizand, Iowa State veterinarian. Well, should we just stop importing feed from China?
Sure, I don't. That's a question more for the industry and the USDA. Within the state of Iowa, we don't have regulatory authority over what comes into the United States, but that is exactly a question that industry's had some discussions with USDA and actually the FDA, because they have some authority over feed ingredients that come into the United States.
And so you stay out of that aspect of it?
Well, we make sure we stay aware of the discussions that are going on, but and understand what's being talked about. But we don't have any direct authority over it. But what we do have, and like I mentioned, is we continually encourage producers to have strong biosecurity programs in place and make sure that they're aware of those different possibilities. Another possibility is we have a lot of people that travel to foreign countries, especially China, whether it's people in the United States that own production in China or people going over there and doing consulting, veterinarians doing consulting, and even just travelers, and making sure they're aware of, if they visit farms, to not bring any clothing or shoes back that has been in contact with pigs over there, or make sure they're thoroughly cleaned and disinfected. And then also practicing good biosecurity downtimes. That I think the accepted time frame is at least 5 days from pigs in a foreign country to going back to a farm in the United States.
Well, this is all news to me, but I suspect people in the industry, this is just common knowledge.
I think to some degree it's common knowledge, but making continually, and that's also one of our jobs. We've had several recent producer meetings to try and make sure people are aware of what a foreign disease outbreak could look like, what a producer may be faced with, and again, stressing biosecurity and what they can do on their farm. So there is awareness out there, but continually making sure everybody at the ground level is updated and understands what's going on is very important.
Well, and you're sort of the first line of defense from all of these diseases possibly getting to humans, too.
Sure. African swine fever is not a disease that affects humans, but there are some that we deal with on a regular basis, from canine brucellosis to tuberculosis in cattle. So we routinely work with regulated diseases that do have a zoonotic component to them.
Do we have cases of tuberculosis in cattle ever?
Not in Iowa, we do not. We get traces. There are some surrounding states to Iowa that have infected herds with tuberculosis, and we will get traces from those herds, and we follow up with those and treat them appropriately, whether they have, depending on what types of animals they've received from the infected farm, but usually we'll quarantine them till slaughter, or if we can, we'll do testing of the herd to see the get the status. But we do not have any infected premises that we know of today in Iowa.
Would that be big news? It seems like it would be big news to me.
Sure, it would be, yes.
More in depth after this.
Continued my conversation with Dr. Jeff Kaizand, Iowa State veterinarian. Now, this was before your time as state veterinarian, but the avian flu really decimated our poultry industry a few years ago. Is that still a concern?
Sure. I was actually assistant state veterinarian when that happened. And yes, we continually, that's part of also our foreign animal disease preparedness and the meetings and the workshops and working with industry to make sure we're as prepared as we best as we can be. But it's always avian influenza is in wild birds, migratory birds. So there's always a risk that it could be there. And that's, again, one of the huge keys that producers need to remember is good biosecurity and either preventing wild birds from having contact with their commercial production and making sure that as workers go in and out of buildings, they're disinfecting their boots or changing their boots. So if there's wild birds around the outsides of their buildings, we're not tracking anything into the buildings that could be a source for avian influenza. So we absolutely are aware of the potential and continually prepare for the possibility of another outbreak.
Well, the different producers have to have a conscientious staff because it'd be really easy not to change your boots.
Sure. That's why biosecurity is not an always an easy thing to implement every day, and sometimes it takes some work, but it's very important, and taking those extra steps every day goes a long ways in the big picture of preventing a disease outbreak.
And so what other additional factors influence good biosecurity at our different production facilities?
Sure. It's always training workers to understand and identify what a foreign animal disease could look like, even domestic diseases, having workers trained or caretakers on farms to make sure they identify anything that's not normal. And in the case of a foreign animal disease, make sure everybody's reporting it very quickly if they can and as soon as they identify it, because the keys to preventing a large disease outbreak is catching it early and making sure we contain it as quickly as possible. So early disease reporting is critical. So again, working with people on the farms, caretakers, to identify diseases, identify all the steps that are important to biosecurity, how you get in and out of facilities, odd clinical signs, making sure you're not bringing food in from elsewhere into farms, understanding where feed comes from, but wrapping everything up together in a good biosecurity plan.
Now, the industry, at least parts of the industry, have come upon hard times. I remember last year at one time, people were losing $18 a hog. As the industry is impacted negatively, is it tough to maintain the biosecurity principles in place when, in a time when, you know, there's not a lot of money to go around?
Sure. There are times it becomes a little bit more of a challenge to make sure biosecurity is in effect every day, and as you mentioned, sometimes economics plays a role in it. If it does sometimes cost, or it usually does cost, to implement a good biosecurity program, and sometimes it's hard to measure what you get out of those investments in biosecurity, because if you don't have a disease challenge or an outbreak, it's hard to measure that return on investment for biosecurity. But it's biosecurity is something that you can't do one week and not do the next. It always has to be in place every day. The other thing with biosecurity that sometimes is tough is making sure you focus on it every day. Sometimes we focus on things and as a little time passes, we think it's in place, but if we don't continually reinforce it, it's just like anything in life. If you don't continually focus on it, sometimes you lose track of it and forget about what you need to focus on.
Well, it doesn't help that the foes are invisible.
That's exactly right. It's not only spending the money on it, but if you can't see what you're protecting yourself against, it's sometimes hard to understand why you're doing it.
Yeah, if it were wolves at the door, it'd be a different story.
That's exactly right, but that's the problem. And a good saying that goes along with that is biosecurity is the protection against the unknowns, not the knowns.
Anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today?
We encourage everybody to have a premise ID, which is part of the process. If we have a foreign disease outbreak and we need to identify producers that either in areas near infected premises or put out any types of notices, we need to have that current contact information and know where the animals are. So we strongly encourage everybody to get a premise ID and keep that information up to date of contact information, who the person is we need to contact if there's a problem.
Thanks to Dr. Jeff Kaizon for contributing to the program.
An audio copy of today's in-depth program is available at KNIAKRLS.com on demand or for download. Just click podcasts. If you have topics or show ideas you'd like to hear in-depth, contact KNIAKRLS by sending an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's local news and the number one news and information source in South Central Iowa is KNIAKRLS.